Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Hello, everybody. You are very welcome along. It is the kickoff. My name is Cathal Minogue, and as always, by my side, my safety blanket, my sidekick, the Robin to my Batman, Colin Boohey.
Who's that? Oh, it's me, is it? Oh,
yeah. I kind of like that. I like that was good. I could have went on there, but it's the John to my Edward.
It's the perfect domino of life, isn't it? Because you're that to Dave Moore.
Yeah, I don't think he needs me as much as I need you.
Stop, you big flirt and charming man.
I just need your knowledge and your random memory of games in the 90s. And who scored the goal in the 2-2 draw between Sunderland and freaking Newcastle.
You know, my father always says to me, like, could you ever, like, you know, you have a one-track mind, like, and he meant football. And then secondly, he was like, would you ever do something useful? And I'm looking down the camera right now. And look at me. Look at me now. I'm a Cathal Minogue. You know, it was destined.
Yeah. Well, look, come here. This might bring a lot of flack your way because I know you're getting stressed about this. If you haven't heard before on this show, we've started up a new thing where we're trying to pick the best Premier League 11 of all time. Well, Colin is trying to pick them. I'm just here to hear what he has to say. So far, pretty obvious. Peter Schmeichel in the goal. Right back, Trent Alexander-Arnold. That caused some issues in this building. And left back, the man from Cork, Manchester United legend, Dennis Irwin. Would you call him a Wolves legend as well?
Well, he's a Wolves fan and he played for Wolves to finish up. Mm. I think he'd like to be seen as one, but I don't think he is.
It's United all the way. So today we're going to be picking the two centre-halves. Centre-back, centre-halves, what would you call him?
Good question.
What's the difference?
I would say nothing. It was just terminology.
Is it? Yeah.
Centre back, I would say.
Centre back.
It seems to be. It's a nicer ring to him with centre halves. Can I just confide in you, old pal, that this is very tough.
So you were on your actual job this morning on Off the Ball, OTB AM.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Off the Ball Breakfast. Is that the official term?
Yeah.
Not OTB AM, no.
Gone are those days.
Oh, sorry, it's gone old terminology.
That's the big 4,000 word on the Athletic, how they changed from OTB AM to Off the Ball Breakfast.
Off the Ball Breakfast, I am sorry.
Oh, it's okay, man. You only produced the show, don't worry about it.
I did, yeah, for 2 weeks while you were gone.
Yeah.
They never asked me back after that. Tell
me.
What
to do with your talent.
Did I hear this morning, were you asking? Yeah. Were you talking about it? You're obviously getting stressed. This is seeping into your actual job.
Because I was actually caring about this. The goalkeeper and fullbacks to me were no problem at all.
Okay.
No problem. And in the centre backs, it was like, Jesus. Like, first of all, we're playing a two, right? What's the formation that we landed on here? It was a 4-3-3.
Yeah.
So I was okay with two. So then the problem I had was like, there's so many candidates. And the way that, like, left back last week was actually fairly straightforward. Like, I thought it was a decision between Ashley Cole and Dennis Irwin, you know?
Very weird, though, that when we finished up recording, I saw Ashley Cole pop up on the Stick to Football.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
It is.
But Dennis Irwin had already been on. So there you go.
Yeah, well, to be fair, they've had nearly everyone in this team on at one point. Like,
yeah.
So I had a decision to make about, do I go for partnerships or just one-off defenders? So, for example, like, could I go like Steve Bruce and Gary Pallister and Stefan Ancho and Sammy Hupia and John Terry and Ricardo Carvalho and Rio Ferdinand and Nemanja Vidic? Or do I go for one-off players like a Ledley King, for example, who's an amazing defender, but, you know, barely fit. And actually, I've just given away half my list there. But that was the thinking behind it. And I was like, I'm actually going to need a bit of conversation around this. So I put it out to the audience on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning, like you say, and the answers came back in abundance on YouTube. And the same debate was happening. Is it one-off players or is it partnerships? I put it up to the former Republic of Ireland international striker, David Connolly.
Oh, yeah.
Straight away. And I was like, just give me your instinctive reaction. And he was like, Vidic Ferdinand.
Really?
Yeah. And he played against Vidic in a reserve game for Wigan, David Connolly, when he was coming back from injury, and Vidic had just signed for the club. And I was expecting this example of how great Vidic was and why he should be in contention to be the greatest ever. So, no, Wolves won 4, or Wigan won 4-0 in the reserve game. And he was like, yeah, he's rubbish. And then he ended up having this unbelievable partnership. So I was like, Jesus Christ, like, there's so many options here. And I can't, do I want to match a bit of pace with strength as well? So do you know what I mean? Do I want two brute force defenders? Do I want two guiley, kind of classy defenders? What do I want in my all-time 11? Big questions.
I think you have so much attacking prowess on either side, I'd be looking at tough men, strong. That'd be my suggestion, but hey.
It's so but look, you're just here to stir the pot. Like, that's your gig. And that's fair enough. You know?
Yeah.
You distracted?
I'm just going to write down who I think the two are.
Okay,
sorry.
Perfect. Oh,
that's all I wanted to do there. Am I distracted? Yeah, I just wrote down my two. And
All right.
Okay, so...
No, I don't even know.
Do you want to give some honorable mentions who aren't close, maybe? Maybe.
Okay, yeah.
Not aren't close, because, geez, you'll be going back to...
That's a great shout. Jamie Carragher, not close, but very good defender for Liverpool. And, you know, his media persona is so pertinent now and strong that you nearly forget about. You know, he's a one club man, played for Liverpool all his life. Yeah, fair play.
700 and something appearances.
Yeah, mad. Yeah, 737 or something. Hit the bar in his last game against QPR from like 30 yards. He's a good footballer on his day. Won everything except the Premier League for Liverpool. Like, most famously, Istanbul 2005. He was monumental that night when Liverpool came from behind against AC Milan. Initially a fullback, went to centre-back, was able to partner Hoopia and then Dan Agger. And he was just very good. Very good defender, but I wouldn't consider him. Ledley King, like I said... What a player for Spurs. And again, another one club man, but unlike Carragher, barely ever trained, just played matches and was still the best player.
Hampered with injuries a lot, was he?
Yeah, he had this long term problem, like in his legs, then.
Right.
Screwed. Tony Adams. And the reason I'm not putting him in is like, just feel that he had his time before the Premier League, you know, so I don't think he was like totally encapsulated by the Premier League era. Now, he did captain Arsenal to the 1998 title, and he famously scores this left-footed goal, this left-footed volley. And Martin Tyler's great commentary over it, and he's like, puts his head up to the heavens and the sun is shining on his face and they've bade everything to win the league. And he's about 2 years sober at this stage and there's all like champagne going off and he steps away. And he was a man like fully content with himself. And it was like a great moment in Premier League history. And what a defender, like the way that... That generation of like Paul Merson and Ian Wright talk about him, like what a centre back, proper, like one of the toughest you'd ever see. And the reason. It was just like, well, he played a lot of his football before the Premier League era that in 1992 before it started. So I'm going to give it to players that played entirely in the Premier League.
Makes sense.
All time. Which is why, and this is a crazy omission, I'm saying it myself, that Paul McGrath doesn't get in. Paul McGrath, like whose birthday is this week, Cahill, who is one of the greats of Irish sport, never mind football, dare I say Irish culture.
Yeah.
He got player of the year in the first season of the Premier League. Do you know that? He was voted at, like, as a centre-back, and that didn't happen that often. I think it was John Terry won it next. So again, very, very close. Not just giving him an honourable mention, not just putting him in my top three, including him, but the only reason I won't is because he had life before the Premier League. And that, like, that's how pernickety I have to be with this criteria, because it's so competitive.
Yeah, it makes sense. And you have to...
I have to have parameters.
You do.
That honestly just makes my decision easier, because I could have... I think I have about eight different partnerships.
Okay.
And so I easily...
You're torn apart here.
Easily put McGrath and Adams as my centre-halves, and I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
But the only thing, I'd walk away from the studio today thinking, I don't know if that's the best representation of the Premier League. Because I'm talking lads who came through in the Premier League, had their peak there, and now are on the other side of it, or else retired or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm guessing you're not going to just go as a partnership. Not a John Terry Carvalho.
No, it's too easy. I've decided that's a cop out. I'm not going to do it.
So you have I'm hoping at this stage, you have picked out who your partnership is going to be. Do you want to maybe give us maybe two other partnerships that you'd be torn? Does that work?
Yeah, that absolutely works.
Don't worry about this, okay?
Vincent Kompany and Sol Campbell.
Okay, that's tough.
They're not getting into the team, Kyle. Vincent Kompany, like, one of Man City's greatest ever players. Turns out he's a good manager too, with Bayern.
Yes.
But incredible, like, the guy signed, I think he signed 2008, right? But I think he signed the start of that summer when they didn't have money, and at the end of that summer they did have money. So he talks about going in and like the facilities were nowhere near what they eventually became. And the stalwart of the club, but like, when Vincent Kompany played for Man City, I always felt they were going to be all right. The guy was actually a midfielder in Belgium with Anderlecht, moved back gradually to centre-half, so he could play a bit of ball too. Scored an amazing goal the week that Manchester City won the league in 2019, a goal that they really needed. That was that week, that was on the Monday night And then the Tuesday night was Liverpool's comeback against Barcelona. And the Wednesday night was Spurs' comeback against Ajax, and both of those two games in the Champions League. But this is Premier League. I think it was at home to Leicester. And Kompany had the ball from like 30-odd yards out. And Sergio Aguero shouts, "Don't shoot!" Because it's him, because it's Kompany. And that angered him, so he put it into the top corner.
Go ahead.
But obviously, Kompany's known for his defending, but he was still able to do that for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was the catalyst, like the catalyst for Man City winning things to start the week. And you could say, like, it was all the money in the world, it was. But they signed him before the money.
Yeah, you
kind of. £6 or 7 million he cost. And captained, obviously, City to their first number of Premier League titles. And I remember thinking when he left that he was going to be a monumental loss, because he's a proper leader, proper captain.
Yeah.
A man, like a proper, like...
tough nut.
Like an old school guy who could play modern football. And like the way I'm describing him there, like he should be in my team the way I'm talking about him. And I could say the same in terms of defensive acumen as Sol Campbell. Right, Sol Campbell... You know, the problem with Sol Campbell is his PR. Like, it's a bit even more pronounced than Ashley Cole's. Sol Campbell, like, you know, termed as a Judas by Spurs fans for leaving Tottenham to go to Arsenal, is seen as, like, extremely full of himself to this day without the charm to get away with it. But unbelievable defender. And in that golden generation that England love calling themselves, or hate, whoever you talk to, like, he was the defender in the team, like... You would play him alongside someone else as well. He always justified his place. And that was from like France 98 into 2002 World Cup, Euro 2004, World Cup 2006. And again, you look at like what did these players achieve? Like Ledley King won a League Cup at Spurs, nothing else. That's not necessarily his fault, but he was at that team. Campbell goes to Arsenal, is part, not part, he's crucial to the Invincibles of 2003-04. Colatori as his partner. Colatori ended up being a great centre back, but I guarantee that's because of Sol Campbell.
You know what I mean? And is he not liked now? Is it kind of?
He's a bit like he's like a complicated soul. His soul, you know what I mean? The way he talks about himself. He was on Stick to Football, another one.
Yeah,
I don't really know what to make of him. He's just unusual, I guess.
It was an interesting interview that actually wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Like people, exactly. Like people are panicking, but I was like, I know, I like it. He's a bit different. There's something about him. He's extremely self-assured. And I guess people are kind of suspicious of quiet confidence. I don't know what it is. Maybe it says more about the people than him. But he does. He's a big fan of Sol Campbell. Is Sol Campbell?
Okay.
Nothing wrong with that. Like, but he defended brilliantly for most of his career, and then right up until the end. Then he kind of dodged a couple of spells in games with Arsenal, and then he goes to like Notts County, which is this ill-fated project where Sven Jørn Eriksson was the director of football, and that I think he played one game there, and then he played for Newcastle. He played for Portsmouth. I think he was part of the FA Cup winning side in 2008 for Portsmouth. So wherever he went, he made a huge impact, more or less.
And he's not going to like you now for this.
yeah, you're very, very right.
He thinks he should be in.
Absolutely,
by the sound of things,
he should be in. Absolutely. Who else? Virgil van Dijk doesn't make the team, and that's outrageous. Virgil van Dijk,
is that outrageous?
Virgil van Dijk is unbelievable. I think people can get caught up in this season's Virgil van Dijk and being like, you know, he's not as good as he was. He's in his mid-30s when he was signed from Celtic. Was it still Celtic? He went Celtic, Southampton, Liverpool. People were, you know, thinking, oh yeah, he's a bit of a talent, right, but would he be able to cut it here? And cut it, like, I mean, he's an absolute bona fide Premier League legend, one of Liverpool's greatest ever defenders. He's definitely in the Liverpool Premier League 11. I'll give him that. Talk about calmness on the ball. Talk about this aura he has that you can't get by him. He's a laid back centre back.
And he's kind of cool as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want that in a player.
You do. And he's captain material as much as Vincent Kompany was, but in a very different way. You know what I mean?
But are we seeing a few cracks now?
Yeah, but that's unfair on the list because the list is all time. You know, there's plenty of cracks in Vincent Kompany's defensive game because he's long retired.
Right, okay.
Now he'd be rubbish.
Yeah, it's how you remember these players. Okay, I hear you.
Sol Campbell had a...
Is he the best centre-back in the Premier League at the moment? Not, and I don't mean today, this actual moment in time.
Probably on his day. Like, Arsenal fans would be piping up now and saying Saliba and Gabriel are great partners.
But they haven't done enough in comparison.
They won all the stuff that Van Dijk's won. But then do you put it down to what fellas have won rather than what they've given? Which would go back to Ledley King.
You could have this conversation again this time next year and it could be a totally different conversation.
But Gabriel and Saliba, if Arsenal win the league this season and they go on to win a number of leagues, they'll be in this conversation in the updated list in 10 years' time. So he doesn't make it. This is ridiculous. Nemanja Vidic doesn't make it.
Okay, this is where it gets interesting.
Yeah, and like Vidic again, we touched on it at the start, like awful beginning to his career at United and then ended up just being crucial. I think he was in three PFA team of the years at centre half, three in a row. Vilic, you know, he has unbelievable statistics to go to his name. Also,
and he's not getting into your team.
A danger at set pieces. I think this is the most stacked area of the pitch, to be honest with you. I think this is going to be more difficult than midfield.
Yeah.
Than up front.
Have to pick.
Honestly, this is so difficult. Ricardo Carvalho.
What a player. Another bit of pizzazz about Carvalho. He, like, part of that Chelsea team that was just Mourinho's incredible team. I loved Carvalho.
Yeah, a brilliant defender. Slightly underrated. Goes to Real Madrid from Chelsea as well.
Is he involved with coaching now, Carvalho?
Yeah.
I recently saw him on the sideline of somewhere.
Yeah, you would have seen him in the Republic of Ireland sideline in the game at the Aviva Stadium.
Portugal.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're now down to three candidates and there's only two positions.
Yeah, and I'm fairly happy because the two I picked are still on my sheet and haven't been said yet. So then you won't be doing too bad.
Do you want to say it
if first? I agree with you. Who my two are? I have John Terry and Rio Ferdinand.
So there's another player on that list. And the other player is getting in. And it's between Terry and Ferdinand to partner him.
Okay, yeah. Let's talk to Terry and Ferdinand so first because...
First of all, they can't play together.
So, which is proven with England.
Well, they have such a difficult past, like with slaves. It's hypothetical team, right? So they can't play together.
And there's not too many that John Terry can do
that, right?
Yeah.
I'll tell you the other man who is getting in first. My first centre back in my all time Premier League 11 is Yap Stam. Now,
come on. Now,
it's not the length of the time that you have, it's what you do with your time. Because as you know, Yap Stam was only at Manchester United for 3 years. That's all he was there for.
Yeah.
Signed in the summer of 1998 and left very acrimoniously in 2001 when he wrote about the Neville brothers in his book and Alex Ferguson took great umbrage with it and decided to sell him right there and then to Lazio and they bought in a well past at Laurent Blanc as his replacement and it probably cost United the league that season as a result.
Busy C-words, I think he called
exactly him. Exactly. Watch out. Spot on. So he comes in the summer of 98 and United win the treble and they ain't winning it without him, right? That's just one point. I've never seen a defender as tough as he was in terms of the bread and butter of defending. He'll hurt you. He'll head it away. He'll put his head in anywhere. His tackling was incredible. The timing of his tackles. You didn't want to take him on one-on-one. Unbelievably quick. Rapid. Yap Stam.
Really?
And he was a bulldog.
I wouldn't have much memory of him being rapid. Yeah,
bulldog. Do you know why you wouldn't have much memory of him? He didn't need to use his pace that much because his positioning was so good. Incredible, incredible defender who had every single attribute you want from a centre back. He had. So he could play a bit of ball. Unbelievably fast. Really aggressive. Didn't take losing as an option, like just was an ultimate winner on the pitch, put his head anywhere and you trusted him because he had all these aggressive attributes, but he had composure and abundance.
He played for 3 years in the Premier League.
3 years, that's it, man. And he was shunted out of it. Okay. Look, Eric Cantona only played for 5 years with Manchester United. It doesn't necessarily matter, in my opinion, how long you're there. I have respect for longevity, I do, but it's not my ultimate criteria because a lot of people hang around at a place for a long time and don't do an awful lot and they get very comfortable.
Yeah, but is he lucky to be picked in this Premier League 11 because he only had 3 years? He didn't have time to make too many mistakes. Also in a great team. I don't know about that one now, if I'm being honest with you.
The only criteria against him is the length of time. But his manager shunted him. Like, Yap Stam should have finished his career at United. I'm sure he would have. He would have played a number of more years. Like Fergie overreacted about something written in a book and sold him. And United paid that price that season. They paid it. Like 2001-2, they finished trophyless. It was supposed to be Alex Ferguson's last season. He was going to retire, remember, at the end of 2002. Do you remember that? The Champions League final was going to be in Hampden in Scotland. That was going to be his greatest farewell. And he messed it up.
I think that could cause you a bit of aggro.
I think the other one will cause even more aggro.
Well,
because it's between one and two and they hate each other.
Yeah. I think you can't go for another United player. in my opinion. Whatever about anything else, whatever about any personal life, and leave John Terry's his personal life.
Yeah, not, because I just want to say
because that's too cloudy for us.
I couldn't put them together. No,
no, no, that's fair.
They can't play it together.
No, that's fair. Yeah, we don't want their names beside each other. Ferdinand doesn't like it.
So Yapstam's centre back partner is John Terry.
That's tough. It is a tough choice. I can see how you're torn.
But it's also a tough as nails partnership. And we'll need it.
Yeah.
We'll need it, right? So John Terry, what a passer. Let's talk about something that you wouldn't always say about John Terry. What a passer out the back. Time and space in the ball, but he'll pick your pass out for you right and left. Ultimate winner. Disregard what you think of him. Ultimate winner. Left foot, right foot. Will block everything. Like, famously, will throw himself in front of every single shot going in. Like, he would just throw himself like a cannon. And
good captain, great captain for that team.
He just had so much presence about him. Like, and like, this is a guy who, when he left Chelsea in 2017, he insisted on a guard of honour for himself in the 26th minute.
Yeah.
The 26th minute of the game. And so, like, this guy comes with problems, right? He's baggage.
Hey, it won't be happening on this team. But we're on the sideline. You ain't getting any of those.
John, you're off. Yeah. I have all these lads on the bench. I'll bring them on.
You've got Rio on the bench.
As soon as you a little bit of this, JT, you're off the pitch.
And did you say he won Player of the Year? One of the only defenders to win?
Yeah, so Paul McGrath got it in 93. And then I think next up was JT.
Okay.
So Mourinho comes in 04 and they win the league consecutive years. And like the core of Chelsea, you're talking Cech and Terry, Lampard and Drogba. And he was just an unbelievable defender. You know how good he was. If you listen to any strikers that played against him, it was like the guy had everything. So the one thing he didn't have actually was raw pace. But his anticipation was so good, he didn't again necessarily need it. So I'm thinking, if I'm a centre forward going up against this this team, like if I'm having those two at centre backs, which one of them is having an off day? Like,
yeah,
which one is Stam and Terry? They love defending and they can play a bit of ball and they win everything. They're the three things I want for my centre-back.
41 goals he got for Chelsea as well in a career of 492 games.
So dangerous. Yeah. So that's it, man.
Look, the Yapstam one to me now.
That's okay. Like, I'm very confident and comfortable with that decision.
Are you? Because I've never seen it. When this is picked, there will be a graph. And that will go out online for the world to see. And I think that's going to cause some issues.
So what if
the immediate
safety is in danger? So what, like, about this, right? You're never going to pick a Premier League 11 that even one person is happy with. Never mind everybody. It's impossible to do this. It's all tribal.
Yeah, because even United fans are going to give out that you don't have Ferdinand besides
Stam. Why don't you have Ferdinand Vidic?
And why isn't Gary Neville on the right? Oh, God.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do here about that, right? There's a part of me, Kyle, right? I woke up on Tuesday and I had Van Dijk and King. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, God, okay, right. Yeah, that would have caused a lot more issues.
Yeah, I did. I had Van Dijk and King. And then I had Ferdinand and Campbell. And then I had Ferdinand and Vidic. Van Dijk is probably fourth here in my list, you know. So
I think Van Dijk is getting hard done by instead of Yapstam, to be honest.
Rio Ferdinand's the one who just misses out. And then Van Dijk would be next for me. He'd be like fourth on the list. No, I'm very happy with the decision of Stam. I know he's the shortest tenure here, but the most impact for me was like, I couldn't find a flaw in his defending. He was incredible. He's the reason for United's most successful season in their history was they had him at centre half. Do you remember in the Champions League final against Bayern, there was no Keane or Scholes in midfield? Like, they were playing Nicky Butt and David Beckham played centre mid, and Jesper Blomqvist played. You had a lot of holes in that team, but Yapstam was at the back. And like, Bayern hit the woodwork twice still, but you still had, was Yapstam at the back, so it'd be grand. You'd be all right because he's there.
Peter Schmeichel, Trent, Dennis on the left, Dennis Irwin.
Yeah.
And then we have Yapstam and John Terry. There you have it, at Colin Buig. That's his Instagram. Get him there. Colin, you have such a strong opinion on this very strange league. We will get to that in a bit. On the way, Nottingham Forest football fan. And it's the return of Callum Farmer to the show.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Welcome back to The Kickoff. At this time of the show, every week, we chat to a fan. But this time, it's the return of a fan. The first ever time we've got the same fan on again. Nottingham Forest's biggest fan. And Mark Only's only Nottingham Forest fan, I think.
What's his name down in News Talk is a fan as well. Eamon Torsney. Yes.
The guy who reads the news.
Yes. No He's way. A Forest fan.
Is he?
Yeah, I've been actually on a flight with him to a match once before. Completely out of sync, yeah.
This is Callum Farmer's voice you're hearing.
Hello.
You might remember back in, it was actually the 10th of September.
Okay.
We had you on. We had you on at the time, Callum, when Big Ange was just unveiled.
Yeah.
And do you know what? Oh, I did myself a lovely little favour and I listened back to our chat. Let's all take a moment back in time, shall we?
They brought in Ange. He's settled in. He's done the first couple of training sessions. He's had a couple of press conferences. There's an aura about him that I really like.
The you're liking the cut of his jib,
yeah,
basically.
Like, I love a manager in a suit. He scrubs up well. I've seen him at the City Ground now, standing, looking a bit surly in front of the Forest logo. And I like this man. There's a nice kind of feel about that, knowing that there's ambition about the club. We're not here to mess around now.
Well, that hasn't taken long, has it? 19 minutes after the full-time whistle went at the City Ground, confirming Nottingham Forest losing to Chelsea by 3-0, and the club have moved, and they've moved quickly because Ange Postecoglou has been sacked. It's a very short statement on their website. It simply says, Nottingham Forest Football Club can confirm that after a series of disappointing results and performances, Ange Postecoglou has been relieved of his duties as head coach. 19 minutes after full-time, his record played 8, won none, lost 6, and today's defeat was a 4th in a row.
We're not here to mess around. 1-0. Okay, now, in fairness, they didn't give much of a chance. But tell me how you're feeling now.
My favourite thing about that club statement, and I don't know if they did it on purpose, but I kind of think they did because I know my football club and they're petty as anything. The statement was 39 words. He was in charge for 39 days.
Oh my God.
I know. That's the level of Mr. Marinakis for you here.
Wow.
I look back at that and I hear that and I die inside because I was so optimistic. After the whole Nuno debacle and after he threw his toys out the pram and wanted to move away, I was like, do you know what? Nuno was such a kind of calm, timid manager. He was not devoid of personality, but like what I said there, I want a manager with a little bit of oomph, a little bit of gravitas about him, and Ange had that. But as the weeks went on, and I say weeks very loosely because he was there for about 5 weeks, not even that, he just... His cockiness was continuing and continuing, and you earn a level of cockiness when you win. You look at like Jose Mourinho, he has that, like what I say, aura around him when you have achieved something. And okay, yes, Ange hasn't got to that level, but he did win the Europa League. He's won a lot of stuff in Scotland. He's been proven, but he just didn't work. He was the wrong man at the wrong time for Forest. And it got to a point where it was really detrimental to the season, where we were languishing with Wolves down at the bottom of the league with no hope in hell. The players that we had, the money that we'd spent, and just like they weren't playing. I don't know what he was doing on the training ground. Morgan Gibbs-White, I remember when Ange left and Sean Dyche came in, he was like, I feel like I've been freed again. I can do what I want. And I was like, what goes on in a football club? In 39 days for it to go toxic like that is so strange.
Yeah.
There was no new manager bounce. They didn't win a single game.
And that's what you're hoping for, get that new manager bounce. And yeah, arrogance is cool and pretty if you're winning, but it's pretty ugly if you're losing.
And it was all about him. All the press conferences, it wasn't about... Now, when I was watching those press conferences, when Ange was very much like he was talking about himself... Part of my head was like, is he doing this to deflect away from the results? Is he taking it away from the team and making it about himself? Which I thought, you know what, that could be a classy thing to do. But as the weeks went on, you just got bored of the shtick. He wouldn't make eye contact with the press. Right? You see him after the game looking down at the floor, not saying anything, looking dejected. And when a goal went in, he'd just be like, his hands would be up like, what the hell was that? Coach the team. Don't like... Yes, it's down on the players, but it's also down on the coach and stuff. It was that team beat Brentford at the start of the season 3-0, and they didn't win again until mid-October even. Like, they were 2-0 up against Swansea in the League Cup, lost that 3-2. They were 2 goals up, I think, in the Europa League and drew that 2-2. They were demolished by Chelsea. Now, they got beat in the week by Leeds 3-1 at home. That was a rollover. The Man City game, the Man U game, that was with Sean Dyche. That was just as kind of the transition was going around. There was a bit of fight. There was a bit of oomph about it. And now, like, they beat Liverpool now again. Liverpool are on a bit of a downturn, but they beat them 3-0 at Anfield. Like, that's unheard of.
It's a strange league, though, isn't it?
And everyone's beating everyone at the minute.
There's no rhyme or reason to it. Myself and Colin will be talking about it later on, but it is a bit up and down, and the results are a bit mental. Although you weren't liking the cut of Ange's jib a couple of weeks after we had that chat, did you still think, give him time, or were you running out of patience saying, I don't think we can waste too long here? Things are getting bad.
I was running out of patience, but I was not expecting the club to move as fast as they did. But again, it all comes down to the characteristics of the owner, Mr. Marinakis. I think he knows that he can't mess around. He knows the importance of staying in the Premier League.
Yeah.
The amount of money that he's invested in, the amount in the infrastructure and the players, the club cannot afford to go down at this point. It would be a disaster financially, because it's almost a gamble. You put so much money in, and it's a long-term investment. It will come back. I like the European money will be handy, but you need more and more of those seasons as you put more and more money in. So I think there needed to be a change. I was fully expecting him to get to Christmas, and if things hadn't have improved by then he may have been out the door. But again, like, Wolves changed their manager. They were on 2 points. They changed their manager 3 weeks ago or something. But they've lost 7 in a row.
Yeah.
And there's no... Forest played Wolves in the week. And that it was one of the worst games of my life that I watched. It was on the TV. And it was just a turgid kind of slow game. And Wolves kind of brought us down. And it made, like, Forest couldn't do the basics because they were really struggling of anything. So it's like, and you could see their new manager, a bit like Ange, kind of frustrated at the team and like head in hands at any missed opportunity or any misplaced pass.
It doesn't have to be pretty as long as you're getting results. And I think at this stage, it's just results is what you want.
Absolutely.
15 points after 14 games, you're 16th in the league. Right now, what are your hopes?
Avoid the drop. Just hope that there's three worst teams around us. And a lot of my friends were saying that it's down with Wolves, Leeds and Burnley. But then Leeds showed a massive resilience in the week to win that Chelsea game 3-1. Yes, okay, Elland Road can be a tough place to go to at any given opportunity. But it's just to be better than three teams at least. Now, the European run is really, really going quite well. They're pretty much guaranteed around in the next knockout round. It would be great to avoid that for a bit of fixture congestion, just remove that and kind of have a bit of plain sailing in February. But the results, I was at the Porto game at the City Ground and they won 2-0 at that. Porto hadn't lost a single game, had only conceded 2 goals, and that was back in October. I went to that and there was no chance, there was no hope that anyone from Forest was going to, the Forest were going to get a result from that. It was two penalties that they won with Forest. And there just seemed to be a bit more of a lighter mood in the camp there. So I would love a run through Europe. Get to a European final would be incredible. I don't know if I mentioned this the last time I was on. Me and my friends already have hotels booked in Leipzig.
Oh, have you?
For the the Europa League final.
Is it okay to tell everyone that? Put the jinx on them.
Well, yeah, maybe I shouldn't say that on national radio.
Well, just look at last year. Look at the form, the league form of both Tottenham and Manchester United, and look what happened there. Eventually, it was Tottenham, and who's the man who brought them to glory? The guy he kicked to the curb. Do you like the cut of Sean Dyche's jib?
Do you know what? When they fired Ange and he was kind of being linked, there was a lot of negativity around my friend group back home, being like, everyone kind of knows what you get with Sean Dyche. I would call it Brexit ball. It's very much like route one, kind of brutalist, kind of just straight, direct to the point. Think of your Sam Allardyce as that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Proper, like, just backs to the wall football. But do you know what? The Forest needed to do something to bring in a bit of feel-good factor, and when they got rid of Ange, they brought in Sean. Sean started his career at Forest. He never played for Forest, but he was there in the academy, and he lives in Nottingham. He's lived in Nottingham when I think even when he was the Everton manager.
Okay.
And he brought in Steve Stone and Ian Wone, who used to play for Forest in the 80s and 90s. I have a picture of a not even a two-year-old on the pitch at Forest with Steve Stone. So I remember these players from when I was a baby. Like, so there was such a PR exercise when they brought this new lot in, because they saw that there was a fractured relationship between the fans and the club, and they needed to get them back on side. And the results have been coming. We've done pretty well with Sean, like I said, beat Liverpool 3-0, got a win in the Europa League against Porto. They won against Malmo 3-0. Like, they're picking up the results. The games aren't pretty, but at this moment in time, it's the wins that we need. The defensive structure is back. The Forest have never been a huge attacking team. It's very much counter on the break and defend well. And you see the likes of Milenkovic and Murillo, who are looking like they're enjoying defending again. Sells in goal is getting a couple of clean sheets. The heart of where Forest was last year with Nuno seems to be back.
Okay.
And if they can push on now, we've got a couple out injured, but they're slowly coming through and they're slowly coming back. And fingers crossed, come May, hopefully I'll probably be on the podcast about four more times after we sack a couple more managers or whatever.
You're an easy target.
I know. The Forest is never boring. And when we were watching, me and my friends were watching the Wolves game in the week, we were all saying this would be peak typical Forest to beat Liverpool at Anfield 3-0 and go to Molineux and get absolutely destroyed. Now, luckily, we won 1-0, but it was a disgusting game. Mm. Like, there was no style or flair whatsoever. But 3 points is 3 points.
Yeah, I don't think you can have a choice at this stage. No. It's not disaster mode at the moment, but you know, you're still hovering around at 16th, like still hovering around the danger zone.
Table is tight. Like, you look between 4th and 15th, and there's only about 5 points in it.
Yeah.
And all you got to do is get a couple of wins in. Last year, Forest went, they won like six in a row. And if they could do that again, that would be unreal. And you never know where you'll end up. But like, give me a Crystal Palace 12th. Finish there and then get a good European run. Thank you very much. And we go again next season.
Good man. Are you going over to any games anytime soon?
I am back in the UK at Christmas. So there is the match on the 27th at the Sea Ground against Man City. Won that one 1-0 last year. Hoping the same again.
Nice one.
Yeah.
Callum Farmer, thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much. I'll see you in January.
Talk to you then.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Now, I hope you've recovered from hearing that Yap Stam is in our Premier League all-time 11, even though he just played 3 years in the league. But sure, hey, that's Colin Bouygues' choice. Colin, there's a whole pile of games on happened this week.
Yeah.
It was a crazy one with Fulham and Manchester City, that 5-4. That was just madness.
That was really mad.
Mad, 5-1 and then go 5-4 and almost equalised.
It was mad, wasn't it? Like, 5 goals for one team and 4 for another. Wouldn't have that happen when Yap Stam's on the pitch.
Leave it go now. We need to move on.
You know, that wouldn't happen, I'd say. I don't think it ever did.
Oh, God.
I don't think it ever did. What a strange Premier League season.
Yeah, right? Looking at the season now, what are you?
It's all over the shop, right? So you have Arsenal and the rest. That's the way I see it, right? So Chelsea, people are getting awfully excited about Chelsea after drawing with Arsenal with 10 men for a good portion of the game. Moises Caicedo, right? Chelsea have only won a quarter of their games without Moises Caicedo. Get sent off in the first half against Arsenal. They get a point from the game. Mm. You could argue they shaded. Then they go to Leeds and lose 3-1, which is a theme of what's been happening in recent times in the Premier League, right? So bear with me on this. You'll recall at the start of last week, Everton go to Old Trafford and with 10 men as well, beat Manchester United, okay?
Mm.
Then Everton get hammered at home to Newcastle, who have been brutal away all season. Meanwhile, Manchester United go to Cedars Park and beat Crystal Palace, who haven't lost at home since the 25th of February, while Nottingham Forest go to Anfield and win 3-0, and then they go and lose 2-0 at home to Brighton. There is no rhyme nor reason to any trends in the Premier League this season. It is all over the place, and the only team that have a bit of composure about them, AFC at the top of the league. It's wild out there, right? Who's the nearest challenger to Arsenal? Right now, Manchester City. Man City have won their last two games, yes, but they've conceded 6 goals en route to those victories against Leeds United and, like you mentioned already, Fulham. Leeds and Fulham are battering you with goals. Doesn't look great when you have a team like Arsenal whose 80% of their victories this season have been to nil.
Yeah.
That's never happened before in the Premier League.
Saying earlier in the season, people couldn't even get shots on target against Arsenal.
Exactly, but they just can't score against them. You know, that's what they do. And most recently, we saw the very handsome, comfortable victory against Brentford, our team, of course. Cleveland Kelleher and Nathan Collins did their best to try and stop the second goal, and it went over the line. But Arsenal will do it to you. They'll kill it to you. Noni Madueke's pre-assist, incredible during the week against Brentford. Lovely little flick if people haven't seen it. They have options in abundance. They're calm about the whole thing. The only thing you'd say about Arsenal is we've seen this before to a lesser extent, and they're very good the first half of the season, and they get very nervous, to put it politely, in the run-in. But we've never seen them as dominant as this in the first half of the season, and there's probably not a viable challenger.
Well, that's it, because Chelsea, we thought, might be the one to test them, and now all of a sudden they're 9 points away from them, 24 points, Arsenal on 33. Is City now the nearest challenger? Although if anything happens to Haaland, you'd imagine they could be screwed. 15 goals so far this season. Obviously it's theirs to lose now, but do you still think that could happen? And could City sneak up out of nowhere? And what about Aston Villa?
Yeah, Villa are a strange one.
27 points, just a point behind City.
Yeah, they're very. It's a weird one with Villa, because they started the season so poorly, like so drably, and they've really recovered very well. But I don't really trust Villa to sustain any sort of challenge there. Champions League football, maybe. Same with Chelsea.
Like, you think about it, if Villa are playing Arsenal this weekend,
yeah, that's
half 12
one.
On Saturday, yeah. Playing them at home, if they win that, they're at 30 points.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
City win, you know what I mean? But they're at 31.
That would still mean that Arsenal have, the very least, will end the weekend with a 2-point lead. And the way that they're playing at the moment, it's just so hard to back against them. Like, they've only conceded 7 goals all season. Nearest to that has 11 with Palace, who, funnily enough, as I say, just lost to United. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So it's all over the shop here. With City, like, the only reason you were saying, okay, how will it not happen that Arsenal don't win the league, is because they haven't in 22, it'll have been 22 years, and because City have several times under Pep Guardiola. So they know how to do it. It's just a matter of, can they regain the title? But the only thing with City is that they are conceding a worrying number of goals, and they probably, like, if you think of, like, title-winning sides, right, in Premier League history, there's always central figures to those sides. Like, every single one of those teams have, like, at least a handful of players who are crucial to that victory. And if you look at Man City's squad this season, it was like, who were their, like, really crucial players? You know, so obviously your man up front, they have a new goalkeeper, Gianluigi Donnarumma, who's big time in terms of his CV and what he's done in the game, but he's still susceptible to the odd mistake. And this is his first season in the Premier League.
Yeah.
But you look, like, who's their main centre back? Probably Ruben Diaz. Okay, he's good. He's very good player. Like, is he a catalyst to winning a team, to winning a title? I'm not sure. Who's their main centre mid now? They have a load of quality there, but they've lost, like, big experienced characters like Kevin De Bruyne, Ilkay Gundogan. Tijani Reinders is a very good player. Cherki's excellent. Marmoush, like, all very talented. But then you look at why Jeremy Doku's having a good season, but would you look to win the league on the basis of Doku? They just have a lot of very good players. I'm not sure they have, like, the leaders to win the Premier League, if you get me. Does that make sense?
Mm. If Arsenal do slip up this league, will it be one of the biggest collapses, or is it just too early? If it happens later in the season, possibly, after leading the whole way?
Not points-wise, but I would say dominance-wise, that they're so much better than everyone else at the moment, that if they don't win the league this season, something would definitely have gone badly wrong at Arsenal.
Arteta could definitely be gone then.
Even though, well, it would be interesting in terms of the collapse, because right now we're talking about, like, will Arne Schlott go? But if Arsenal were to fall apart in the next few months, which looks so unlikely, but if they were to do that, yeah, of course he'd have huge questions to answer. Because right now Arteta looks to be the best manager in the Premier League, but his status is so fragile. Like,
yeah,
there's so much fragility to how great Arteta is or potentially can be, that if he goes on a bad run, people will turn against him very quickly, because he hasn't won a trophy outside of 6 months in the COVID FA Cup final in 2020. As one of trophies, so that will always be held against him until he does win it. I can't see any reason that Arsenal won't win the league right now, put it that way.
How huge is it for Liverpool to beat Leeds this Saturday evening? They play him away from home, 5:30. Leeds currently 17th in the league, Liverpool 8.
Yeah, it's probably huge. And what might go well for them is that Leeds already beat a big side at home this week. Already, like, in the shape of Chelsea 3-1 at Elland Road. So this match again is at Elland Road, and you don't know, can you beat Chelsea and Liverpool consecutively when you're a team like Leeds who ship a load of goals, however flawed Liverpool are at the moment? Liverpool badly needed, to answer your question. Like, they went to West Ham and they won last weekend, but West Ham are a poor side. Like, they're really, like, they might stay up by default, because Wolves are almost certainly doomed. They only have 2 points, And then it looks like Leeds and Burnley would join them. So like maybe West Ham will stay up, but only for that reason that they're probably the fourth worst side in the league. So how much of that can you read into? I'm not sure. Funny enough, Salah hasn't started either game the last week against West Ham or Sunderland. And he came on against Sunderland at halftime. Sunderland are a good side, like, so they probably should have won that game in Anfield. They had a shot cleared off the line in injury time. They hit the woodwork twice as well. And they were dangerous. So I think Liverpool desperately need to win this game against Leeds just to calm everyone down. Like, there's so much discussion around Liverpool at the moment and the future of their manager and how can you align that squad and what's the best team you can pick out there and where's Salah's positioning in that? What are they going to do with Florian Wirtz? What's the story with Alexander Isak? They have loads of questions to answer and they can begin that with a win against Leeds and Elland Road. It would be a good win. It would look good because Leeds just beat Chelsea, who were a better side than Liverpool.
Mm.
The Premier League's all over the shop.
It is all over the shop. Yeah. It's hard to... Do you know what's also all over the shop is the fixtures. 7 games on Saturday, only 2 games on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't know why they do that sometimes. I don't rhyme or reason to the fixture list. It's like always TV related, but the actual specific arguments for it would be interesting. So like the lunchtime game on Saturday is Villa-Arsenal. And then the half 5 game is Leeds-Liverpool. Then you have 4 3 o'clock games. And then, yeah, on Sunday you have 2. Which they're not great, are they, on paper? Brighton, West Ham and Fulham Palace.
It's hard to sell a super Sunday there.
Very difficult. And then Monday night, Wolves Man United.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well look, you'll be watching them either way, says you.
Yeah.
Live on Sky Sports as well. Premier League action. Colm, thank you very much.
Nice one, Colm.
Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.